Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Underground, as we go across the nation once again here, kicking off the Raw Reaction on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the show. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me at the present moment, the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Buglisi.
Hello.
And there's the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, yet?
Still recovering from a long weekend, I take it, Tony?
Oh, no. There's no recover for me. I simply exist.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry.
I 100% believe that is accurate. He doesn't get drunk. He just gets more awesome.
Yeah. I'm actually I'm getting ready during this podcast to go to a strip club to celebrate my friend's birthday on a Monday.
If that's everybody's definition of awesome, okay.
The advantages of bartender life mean your Tuesdays don't require you to do much, therefore going out to a strip club on a... Seriously, how is the Monday caliber a girl of the strip club? I imagine not good.
Shit, I don't know. I'm not worried. You know, it sounds weird coming from a male, but I don't particularly go to a strip club for the strippers. My friend bartends, so I go there to get, you know, many drinks for a low price, and everything else is a plus.
I'm not a strip club person. I don't see the point, honestly.
Yeah, it's not my go-to choice, but he's just turning 25, so I'll be there for him.
You're a good friend, Tony Acero.
Yeah, the sacrifices I make are crazy, I know.
How was your weekend, Liz?
It was all right. Nothing interesting to report. Nice and dull.
You know what wasn't especially dull? Tonight's Raw. We had a lot going on. Segway! Not a very good one, but hey, whatever. Tired. Leave me alone. It's 11:30 on a Monday. I should be sleeping. I'm getting old. All right, anyway. So let's kick off the show here. We actually open with a match. The 24/7 title is on the line in a tag team match. It's the Teddy Long Special. It's a tag match. Really? No one? Okay. As R-Truth and Carmella face Drake Maverick and his wife, Renee Michelle, the match goes a minute and 58 seconds. Renee only gets into the ring briefly to get into a chick fight, a cat fight, whatever you want to call it, with Carmella. Maverick breaks them up, and then Maverick turns into a gourd buster for the pinfall as Truth retains the title. However, as soon as the match is over, the suspended 24/7 title rules are reenacted, and a huge dog pile happens, leaving Mike Kanellis coming out of the dog pile with the 24/7 title and taking a hiatus up the ramp. maybe even an Exodus, but possibly a Genesis and McGillicuddy. Right, Tony?
Oh, God.
Shout out to Tony's old NXT reviews on 401 Mania. If you guys get a chance to check those out, that poor bastard deserves everything he gets from 411 these days just for sitting through that tripe.
It was
anyway,
so much fun.
Backstage, it did introduce you to AJ, though, so, you know, it has that going for it. Well, I mean.
Yeah.
Aw, Puddin'.
Get that out of the way early tonight. Backstage, Kanellis ducks into the WWE officials' locker room, which surprises the hell out of me because I wasn't aware that they had one. Eventually, Maria comes over and tells Mike to open the door before she knocks it down and kicks him in the vagina. Yep, they're being punished for not reporting her pregnancy. Afterwards, backstage segment, Maria tells Mike to lay down. Mike does. Maria becomes the 24/7 champion, and this belt officially jumps the shark. All right, a lot to process there, Tony. Why don't you go ahead and take it from wherever you want to take it from?
Well, to jump the shark, you first have to have some semblance of quality. I still strongly stand by my sentiment that the 24/7 title is completely pointless, devoid of any value, and just can't really... it's just not my thing. Tonight did not make it any better. From the you know, the way that it started, a mosh pit mixed tag match, they're just like, they pick names out of a hat or some shit. It didn't make sense, really, period. Although it was nice to see Drake Maverick's wife, an indie wrestler for a long time, be on Raw. I mean, I'm sure that was a big deal for her, and that's always cool to see. Ultimately, this led to a segment that didn't work or land for me at all. I'm going to kick you in your vagina isn't something that it's not tongue-in-cheek. It's not funny. It's not risque. It was just annoying. It's like a 12-year-old trying to, you know, be rude and really just coming off as cheesy. The whole relationship between Mike and Maria, I don't get nor do I care for. I don't even think it's punishment. I think that they think this is some type of good idea that will eventually lead to something. What that something is, I don't know. This was a really bad start to Raw. Thankfully, it kind of was relatively short and, you know, got out of the way for that gauntlet match that came up next. But I don't have anything good to say about this, like, at all.
I mean, I kind of appreciate the fact that they self-contained the 24/7 title to those couple of bits there. There was one little brief bit segment backstage where Maria's having an issue with getting into kind of a little bit of an agitated conversation with Braun Strowman, where she's being an antagonist towards Strowman. Strowman just kind of growls at her, and Maria runs. Liz, what did you think?
Even that was weird.
Title?
That was super weird.
Ahead,
no, I mean, it's just that just wasn't interesting either. That was all we need to put Braun on TV. Forgot about him, and then that's it.
As far as the Mike and Maria backstage thing, where she threatens to kick him in the vagina, just seems like a really bad attempt at femdom parody. Liz, what did you make of the 24/7 title of shenanigans tonight?
You know, it's whatever you want to say about the belt. It does, you know, bring some humor, and the fans seem to, you know, enjoy it. I enjoyed it. You know, it always has its moments. Drake is always putting up these crazy, you know, things on his Instagram, you know, furthering it, like little flyers that he actually makes, or like just stupid stuff. It makes it like really fun, and he keeps it out there. But I think the crap that they did tonight just killed it. Any momentum, any interest it had for me anyway, because how are they going to get it, you know, off of her without some big, you know, stupid drama? I don't like her. I mean, everybody keeps trying to tell me, oh, she worked hard, she did this, she did that, maybe she did. I find her extremely uninteresting, and this screechy voice that she uses grates on my everlast nerve. And you know what, it's going to be most likely lead to like somebody pinning her and she gets hurt, and there's this whole, oh my God, is she going to lose the baby nonsense? I mean, hopefully they won't go there, but it kind of seems like where they're trending, and that's just going to be one of the worst things that they could possibly do.
The gauntlet match that Tony mentioned is up next as the U.S. title shot at SummerSlam is on the line. I'm going to take this match by match, and I'm going to do it for a very specific reason. Tony, you ready?
Okay.
Rey Mysterio and Cesaro got 11 and a half minutes of television time to have a match on Monday Night Raw tonight, and it kicked ass. Rey looked as good as he has since he's returned to the company, and Cesaro looked like, well, Cesaro, if we're being honest. In the end, Rey put Cesaro down with a frog splash followed after a 619. Tony, Rey Cesaro to open the gauntlet. Your thoughts?
It was everything I wanted it to be. No, it was beautiful. It was great. I mean, it's kind of an expectation, at least for me, to have a good match here, and he didn't disappoint. I say he and Cesaro, but there's no doubt that Rey Mysterio, like, the fact that he is the age that he is and he has injuries that he has had, for him to be able to go this long is a testament and not make it boring. Because we saw another match later tonight that was kind of lengthy, but just kind of devoid of excitement. I really don't have much to complain about this match in its entirety, not even the person who won, more so the fact that it was predictable. But in terms of wrestling itself, this was, It was great. I was off. It also saw the return of commercials mid-match. So there's that to look forward to. That little experiment's done, it seems.
We'll talk more about that here in a few moments because that actually does play a much more prevalent role a little bit later on in the show. Liz, what did you make of Rey and Cesaro?
You know, I mentioned last week that I've never been a big Rey fan, but you can't deny that he is, of course, an amazing talent, and especially, you know, at his age. And like Tony said, with his injuries, it was a great way to open it. Probably my highlight match of the show, which, of course, we'll get to way later, but definitely nothing you can complain about. Both of them were, I think, pretty much on top of their game tonight.
Sami Zayn comes in next, and Rey Mysterio eliminates him about as quick as he entered. I don't really think we need to add anything to this, so therefore we'll skip forward. If you have anything to add, you can feel free to add so in your thoughts on the next match in the gauntlet, which we will talk about. And that was Andrade coming out and apparently using a wild card from SmackDown. I guess the wild card is still a thing or whatever. I don't know. But Andrade comes out to take on Rey, renewing their rivalry from SmackDown from a while back. And this time, Rey tries the 619 again and ends up getting it countered into the hammerlock DDT to allow Andrade to advance to the final match here. Liz, what did you make of Rey Mysterio and Andrade renewing their rivalry and Andrade's performance in general? Okay. Tony, you want to go ahead and answer that instead?
Sure. You know, I was actually in my kitchen when Andrade's music hit, and I got super excited that, you know, that doesn't happen often on Raw. The wild card thing, just, I hope it goes in the same way that the commercials did, where it's not necessary anymore. We've accepted that, you know, anybody could pop up anywhere. The thing is, if they don't ever clarify or make it an actual thing, then the brand extension, it loses value, and also the wild card loses value. And, of course, come Survivor Series, we're going to have to pretend to care that Raw versus SmackDown is a thing. But with regards to Andrade, a welcome addition to the match, an amazing, amazing opponent of Rey's, and just like a fucking presence, in my opinion. I felt like every single person in this match deserved to be there and had something at stake. Zelina played her part greatly. The ripping of the mask, like, I mean, I think we talked about it a while ago where we could watch these two wrestle for a long time, multiple times, but this was the furthest he's gotten to, like, just destroying Rey. And although they glossed over it, it could be the start of another official feud between the two, and I'm all for that. These are the things that I value in matches where multi-man matches specifically, where you're going to branch something out from it. So Andrade was never going to win, you know, but you gain something from him being here. By him attacking Rey and taking his mask, that was something stemming from this match that otherwise would not have, you know, happened. So I thought it was a great addition to the match. I thought the match itself was cool. When we hit to the, you know, after we talk about the final opponent, I'll give you reasons why I didn't enjoy the idea of it as a whole.
Liz, what did you make of the Andrade Array segment, assuming you're back with us?
Yeah, I am. I had to move locations, and I actually accidentally hit the mute button on my phone. It was really good. I'm actually hoping we get more of them. I mean, we've had bits of them, you know, here and there. But they work really well together. I actually, you know, not many things make you, like, really go, you know, or gasp when you watch it anymore, at least at my advanced age. But the whole, you know, tearing of the mask, that really got me. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, I haven't really given Andrade much attention, mainly because I'm so busy on Tuesdays. I haven't really, when he was on SmackDown, was able to pay much attention to, and he's kind of got lost in the shuffle. But I would love to see them have a bigger feud and bigger matches than we've had with them so far.
I think the problem with it being this close to SummerSlam is I don't know that there's enough time to really do anything for SummerSlam with them. But the rumors had made the rounds here, and this is going to be one of those times where we kind of delve into the internet talk that Tony loves discussing so much, that when Rey Mysterio does get ready to leave the WWE this time, he wants to lose his mask as he does to so in order to signify his official retirement from the world of professional wrestling. Tony, I'm going to put you in kind of a yes or no situation here, in kind of a be the booker situation here. Is Lucha de Espuesta between Rey and Andrade mask versus hair or something along those lines, something you would be interested in going forward to see Rey's write off from the WWE?
I mean, I don't think it would add much value unless they expanded upon the Mexican heritage of the mask, but I don't think that they're capable of doing so, especially considering how well they treat Lucha House Party. I'm not one to represent the Hispanic forefront of the fans, because I don't speak for them, but I think if you're going to do that with these two people, that they would get away with doing an amazing story if properly represented. Other than that, I don't particularly care. I think that their wrestling speaks for itself. I'm not going to go with the Meltzer report of any possibility of a rumor of this or that or any other thing. And with them having time, I mean, I've said this before, you can create a story in one show. We saw it last week, a story enveloped in one show. So I kind of anticipate an Andrade versus Rey match on SummerSlam. I mean, isn't this year going to be like 19 hours long anyways?
You're not wrong. Liz, same question. Thoughts on potential for Lucha de Espuesta?
I actually don't care, to be honest with you, and that sounds horrible to say on the podcast, but I've given it no thought, actually. I'm going to be honest with you. I've given it absolutely no thought. So anything I say is just going to sound, you know, contrived and worse than I usually sound. I am not sold that everybody has to, like, you know, lose their mask and be unmasked to signify their retirement. I will say that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a testament to the quality of the wrestling. Where, I mean, even Liz, I don't really give a shit if they lose a mask or not. I mean, if you're going to have a match, then have the match. I don't like anything. I think the only one I really enjoyed was, like, Kurt Angle, you know, because the match becomes a gimmick, and it becomes focused more on constantly trying to rip a mask off and pulling hair and, you know, instead of the quality that could come with an actual wrestling match. And then losing and having that moment, like, shit. I mean, he's free to lose the match and then take his mask off and do it that way. But to have it, like, a part of the match, I think, kind of devalues what they could possibly do.
Well, we saw it something similar a couple of years back when Mysterio was feuding with CM Punk. The whole mask versus straight edge society thing. Back before Punk had his breakout performance when he was still part of the new Nexus.
Yeah, one could claim that worked out. I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure it was kind of, again, just a part of a match instead of, like, you know, a backseat. So WWE doesn't know substance, and it also doesn't know how to just kind of slowly unveil things.
So what you're saying is they're not very good at subtlety.
No, or writing. They're very direct. I mean, come on. When HBK's music hit tonight, Michael Cole says, "Oh my God," as if you didn't show up on fucking Tuesday. Calm down. No, they don't know subtlety at all.
The final match in the gauntlet sees Andrade taking on Ricochet. Tony, you were going to mention something about the obviousness of this gauntlet match here leading to the return match between AJ and Ricochet at SummerSlam. But at the same time, I think Ricochet and Andrade had a fun performance against each other here. And for a brief moment, even though you knew Andrade wasn't winning, you were able to at least partially suspend your disbelief around that fact.
I don't think I was. I mean, don't get me wrong.
I was.
I love this match. I thought it was amazing. But if they would have came up today and said Ricochet had earned a spot against AJ at SummerSlam, or someone had said, hey, AJ's fighting him or whatever, no one would have cared. Meaning no one would have cared that they did that. They wouldn't be upset about it. They'd accept it, and the match would be. So tonight you have a gauntlet match to seemingly prove that Ricochet is worthy of said shot. Instead of doing the whole, you know, rematch or he deserves this, or which is great. However, it makes it extremely predictable. And you notice people that you might want a little bit more in that match. So I'm watching this gauntlet match, and I'm thinking, man, Cesaro would be an amazing – I would watch Cesaro versus AJ. And I do think that there's money in it in a particular way. But the story with Ricochet isn't done yet, so it's obvious that they're not going to win. Same thing with Andrade. That'd be awesome. But the story is not complete. And this is a mistake on the writer's part where they're not good closers. And we've seen this many times before. A story could start out engaging and start out very, very interesting and then quickly devolve into itself and become repetitious and boring, similar to AJ Styles versus Ricochet. And then when they finally have that point to possibly close it, they either stretch it beyond its means or make it so unimportant that the close doesn't matter. I think that this was an example of what can happen if you do that. Because AJ versus Ricochet could have ended, and you could have had a surprise opponent in Cesaro or Andrade. And Ricochet could still very much be involved and, you know, wanting and yearning for the title. What that does is it creates a multitude of people at the same level, yearning for the same thing, wanting a particular thing. And the story is, how do they get it? How do they get to that point where they finally are able to put their fingertips on what they wanted for so long? Instead, we're getting a retrieve, and this is only a critique of the writing, because no matter what, the match is going to be amazing. Tonight, we got some great wrestling out of it. So I know it's lengthy, my rant, if you will, but it's about a very small problem that happens consistently throughout the product. You saw it again later on tonight when people, when there was a bit of a clash at the end of the show, where they didn't really finish certain things, they just decided to combine certain things. I will say this, though. It's a good sign that things are trying to get cleaned up. At least it feels that way.
All right. I think everybody died.
Oh, wait, it helps if I actually unmute my microphone. I'm slow. Sorry about that. What are your thoughts on the ending of the gauntlet with Ricochet and Andrade?
Another great feat. I mean, overall, you can't complain about that gauntlet match at all. And I'm generally not a fan of gauntlet matches and multi-man matches. They get on my nerves. I feel like for a long time they overused them. And to be honest, at first, because I guess I was a little out of it today, I was stiff for a second. I was like, what is the purpose of this gauntlet match? But then thankfully, I think Cole told me. So that made it make more sense. But, you know, overall, it was a great match. I would love to see, like Tony was saying, more people involved in going after, you know, one thing at a time, you know. Andrade going after Ricochet and, you know, and AJ, you know, whatever, however you want to word it, however you want to do it. I think it would definitely make things more interesting because you have so many people doing little pieces of it, you know, at a time. You'll get like this, you'll have like these two people going after each other, then you'll have this random match where one's with somebody else and then that's forgotten about. And sometimes it's like, well, what happened to that person? So I would love to see that get more, you know, rounded out and have more involved in a chase for a single title.
Tony, let me ask you a quick question about your thought there with Ricochet coming in last for the Gauntlet match. Do you think it would have helped your suspension of disbelief if Ricochet would have came in first and had to overcome the entire Gauntlet to re-earn his title shot? Or do you think that would have upset you more?
It would have been even more predictable because Ricochet is known as an underdog, right? And I think that the more they try to pound that in, the more annoying it gets. You end up starting to kind of believe it. I think that they would do better, and this is going to take a long time, but I also see them trying to do it with someone like Cedric Alexander, where stop trying to make them underdogs, make them, you know, a kind of a player. We are always going to think that they're not good enough because they're small, and we're always going to think that they can get tossed around by, like, Drew or even AJ, who's pretty short himself, simply because of the way that you portray them. Well, if you train your audience a particular way, you can't get mad when their thought process goes exactly with what you're training them to do. So we don't need the plucky underdog, you know, beating all the odds. We need a good wrestler being better than another good wrestler. And I think that because of that, it was kind of a good idea not to have him start.
Very well. Liz, anything to add to that, or shall we move on?
We can move on.
Okay. That was basically the first hour of Monday Night Raw. And outside of the Maria Kanellis thing, I actually thought the first hour of Raw got off to a pretty decent start. I didn't mind the 24/7 title match just because, A, you can clearly tell that Drake Maverick and Renee Michelle are having the time of their lives doing this. And, B, it's harmless fun for the most part. Now, once the Kanellis effect took over on it, it took away the harmless aspect of it and probably the fun aspect as well. But between Truth, Carmella, Renee Michelle, and Drake Maverick, I didn't have an issue. We move on to tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw with a moment of bliss as Alexa and Nikki are out to discuss everything that's going on thus far, basically recapping the first hour for you. She talks about what happened on SmackDown with Dolph and Shawn Michaels, which I thought was weird and out of character for her. Because why should she care about anybody that isn't named Alexa Bliss or by proxy Nikki Cross? She then shows a highlight from before the show where Finley is training with Natalya, trying to show her how to counter the disarmer when Becky Lynch comes in and attacks both Finley, Natalya, and the person that they were training with, calling Finley a traitor in the process. Becky pops up on screen to confront Alexa about this and says that Alexa's just scared of Becky ahead of their singles match a little bit later on in the show. I actually like the little backstage bit that they used during a moment of bliss here, showing Natalya working with Fit Finley. Don't get me wrong, Natalya's a terrible actress. But A, it's nice for me to see Fit Finley because I like Fit Finley. And B, I like the fact that she's going and trying to do some scouting of the move before the match there. And Finley being the guy to show her how to roll it right from the disarmor straight into the setup for the sharpshooter there adds a layer of intrigue because of Finley's Irish background as well. Liz, what did you make of a moment of bliss tonight?
It's apart from her talking about the reunion, which made absolutely no sense because, you know, whatever. I enjoyed it. It was different. It kind of, for me, was a bit like, I don't want to use the word phrase old school, but I guess it's the only thing I could think of right now. Old school where it's kind of like, oh, they're going to go study their opponents, they're going to watch tapes, they're going to, you know, do whatever. It had that kind of feel to it, which was nice. But for me, it was like, oh, it was very much, you know, a different take on things. I loved Becky calling him a traitor. I loved how she acknowledged the fans were still cheering for Becky, you know, condoning this terrible behavior. All in all, just like last week's segment, it was good. I think it's coming into it, you know, its own. Hopefully, it'll continue to improve.
Tony, your thoughts on a moment of bliss?
I don't understand the Becky character anymore. It's not a big deal. She's always been kind of a badass who does her own thing, but this kind of seemed out of character of what we've seen, what we have been, you know, trained again to believe she is. I don't see the Becky of, you know, Ronda Rousey Becky lore going and blindsiding somebody while they're training. That doesn't vibe with me. So it kind of came off as weird. However, the aspect of Natalya training for this match and for that specific hold, that was cool, and it fits Natty's personality. She's a dungeon chick, so it makes sense that she would do this, and it was kind of cool. I mean, in fact, I would love to see more of that from her in the future. And it's always good to see Fit Finley, so that was cool. Really my only issue was Becky Lynch, you know, kind of just attacking, kicking Fit in the balls and attacking her. Like, I don't know, that didn't make much sense to me. I'm sure they'll try to clear it up. No, you know, actually, I'm not sure they will. I think that they think that that's what a face. All the faces in WWE are assholes, so I guess it shouldn't surprise me. It just didn't. It didn't vibe well. I think that they could have done something a little bit different here to make better sense of it.
See, I'm actually okay with Becky getting in Fit Finley's face about helping Natalya for their match, because it goes back to the fact that Fit Finley was the one that helped Becky get back into the title picture when he was the one that allowed her to get into the Royal Rumble back in January. And she feels as if this is kind of Fit Finley betraying her. So I can kind of see where she's coming from with that.
I think it's another moment of you filling in the gaps for them.
I mean, you're not wrong there, and I wouldn't be surprised if they try to retcon. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to retcon this with something similar to what I just said. But you did
they're
hear
just
Becky
gonna say that they're
Finley.
Both Irish.
Well, I was gonna say you did hear Becky. I don't know how that was supposed to. Apparently, I tried to combine Fit Finley and Becky Lynch there, but anyway. I can kind of see where Becky's coming from as far as Finley being a traitor. And you heard Becky call Finley as much during the segment there when Finley was the one that was teaching Natalya the counter to the disarmer. We'll go ahead and run this into the match itself as Alexa Bliss does take on Becky Lynch. The match goes about 5 minutes before Alexa apparently hurts her ankle on a Bexploder. Nikki Cross jumps up to defend her friend because that's what Nikki Cross does, that gullible, lovable little bastard. And it ends up as Becky Lynch versus Nikki Cross when we come back from the commercial break, where a manhandle slam puts Nikki Cross down in about 3 minutes. So long to your credibility, Nikki. It was nice while it lasted. Post-match, Alexa does jump Becky, proving that the injury was a ruse. And eventually, Natalya actually makes somewhat of a save for Becky as Natalya's appearance causes Alexa and Nikki to stop attacking Becky. But then Natalya puts Becky into the sharpshooter herself. Liz, I'll start with you since I started with you for a moment of Bliss as well. What did you make of the two singles matches and Natalya getting a little bit of revenge for the pre-show attack?
Revenge on, I love Natty. I know she's a horrible actress. I know a lot of people don't like her wrestling, but I've always been a fan of hers. I'm not going to defend her, what can be seen as the inadequacies, though. But that was my favorite part, because I was like, oh, she's actually coming out to help Becky, and then I liked when she, you know, beat her up a little bit. Alexa is a horrible fake crier, even though you knew she was faking. That was just awful. Much better in her Moment of Bliss segments, I think, in terms of acting and speaking than that. Overall, they were okay. It was kind of, you know, funny. Alexa, you know, faking and Nikki, you know, defending her honor again of sorts, but it's not into the Alexa, you know, Nikki thing simply because it's the same thing we see with Alexa over and over. She has a friend, she has a minion, she's going to backstab her eventually. It's definitely a case of them rehashing, you know, very old storylines or, you know, whatever you want to call it in this instance. So it's kind of like you're just kind of waiting for the fallout.
Tony, your thoughts on the two singles matches and then Natalya's bit of revenge?
I got to double the sentiment of Natty. Surprised that segment surprising me. I even wrote in the report, I don't know if I deleted it or not, but I'm pretty sure I didn't. Oh great, here comes Natty to save her. Are we ready for another tag match next week? You know, the people who are facing each other get to tag up. And then she fucking slapped a sharpshooter on her. I was like, hell yeah, okay, that works. That's interesting. That's way better than I thought. And I'm totally okay with being wrong. With regards to the Alexa match, it was kind of weird. We saw Alexa get more offense in a match than I think I've seen ever, if not in a very long time, on Becky Lynch, the champion. So it made me believe that they were trying to make her a viable contender just in the future. One of those things that sets the tone for Alexa the wrestler. She can, at the very least, go toe-to-toe with Becky. She was stronger than I've seen her be, more resilient than I've seen her ever be. And then they pull the injury angle. So it came off really, really awkward to me because it wasn't like she was getting her ass beat and her ass handed to her, so she had to do this. It was like, oh, shit, Alexa's kind of, you know, getting equal footing. Is it boring? A little bit. But, I mean, they're trying to do something here. And those are the things that I've been wanting them to do for a very long time. So I was intrigued. And then she did the injury bit, and it was just like, well, that doesn't make much sense. You were, girl, you were doing all right. You had a chance.
I think the injury bit does make sense, Tony, for the exact reason that you just mentioned, that they're building up Alexa to possibly be Becky's next challenger.
Making her pretend to be injured. That's dumb. You have her do a resilient contest, make the commentary team say, wow, you know, she did really well or blah, blah, blah in the way that they're supposed to, and then you have her lose, and that's it. You know, it's happened.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Sorry, Tony, let me ask you a quick question here before you, and then you can continue your thought. Which one of these two endings here is more befitting of the Alexa Bliss character? A resilient performance where she looks good even in defeat, or weaseling her way out of a match?
You don't have a resilient performance and then weasel out of a match. That doesn't make sense. You're telling me to choose either one, but both happened tonight. So that's where the problem lies. You can't have a resilient person. You have to have her beaten down or realize, I can't win this without faking an injury. It's not like she just hit a point in the match randomly and said, okay, let me pretend this shit doesn't work. I didn't see that. What I saw was them trying to build her up to be a viable contender in the future, if not later or now, and then just kind of randomly, you know, she decided to injure herself. I'm not saying it was a bad angle. I'm saying the combination of the way the match was laid out and what she did didn't make sense in my head.
I'm okay with the fact that Alexa backed out of the match, though, because it fits the Alexa character to me. And there is a story that you can tell with Alexa and Becky's past as well here. Because while Cole mentioned that this was the first time that Becky and Alexa had faced each other on Raw, what he failed to mention here, but something that long-term viewers may remember, is the fact that Alexa's the one who ended Becky's first SmackDown Women's title reign. So I see potential from both sides of both protecting Alexa here as well as having the resilient performance, even if it does go to a finish that doesn't work out for Alexa as well. I see both sides of the coin there. I'm personally okay with the way that they went. What did we think of Natalya's promo after the match, Tony?
Oh, Natty. I don't know. I would challenge you to this match, but you're not going to take it, so I'm not going to challenge you. Oh, okay, Natalya. I don't know how they do it in Canada, but that's okay.
Liz, you just admitted that you're a bit of a Natalya apologist here, but even you have to say that this was not her finest.
No, I said I wouldn't apologize for her inadequacies. I'm well aware of them. I'm not good.
Talking.
Oh.
Her biggest inadequacy? Talking, apparently.
No, I know. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, I've said on the two episodes I've done in this and pretty much every other podcast that nobody probably listened to that I did with you before that I really don't care about women's, you know, wrestling, at least women's wrestling in the WWE, because it is what it is, and most of it, unfortunately, falls short of anything that's truly entertaining. Becky certainly revitalized things for a very long time and continues to do so, but as much as I like someone, I'm not the type to be like, oh my God, that's so wonderful. I love Baron. People hate him. I love Jinder. People hate him. You know, they both, you know, whatever. I'm not going to be like, no, they're perfect. They're whatever. They're not. No, her speaking is absolutely, you know, horrible. I am just hoping we actually end up with a submission match because I don't remember the last time I've seen one of them. Will it be stellar? Will it be up there in the top 10 of submission matches ever? Probably not, but I'll still enjoy watching it most likely.
The answer to your question, I believe, is Charlotte versus Sasha. For the
I probably didn't watch that because I can't stand either one of them, so I probably didn't watch it. So forgive me.
In regards to the last women's submission match. Speaking of Baron Corbin, you'll notice, Tony, that there was no Baron Corbin on tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw.
Oh, I noticed.
I noticed too. Why is this taking so long to find? God damn it, Greg, fix your sound effects.
It's time for another edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
Speaking of people who can't keep themselves out of trouble, the Usos are up next. Segway! As they are in a triple threat match for the Raw Tag Team titles, defending champions Revival and the OC, Gallows and Anderson. The OC is still a stupid name. B, whoever made the gif of the old TV show with the California song and the OC made me laugh. So points for that. C, the match was actually really good. And the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson, are now the Raw Tag Team champions as Gallows pinned Jey Uso with the Magic Killer at 17 minutes and 25 seconds, including action during the commercial break, Tony, to give the Good Brothers their second tag team title reign in the WWE. Tony, what did you think of the triple threat?
I think that the weakest team won, but I'm okay with them winning. I mean, you have this resurgence of energy from AJ slapping them into shape to teaming up with them. So it kind of makes sense that they'd have a little bit more vigor behind their typical go at it. I feel bad for the Revival because I feel like they're suffering from just subpar writing. They're one of the few characters who have an actual character, as minimal as it may be. They went through the bullshit that they did with the Usos trying to be funny, which went to hell. And they, I don't know. I think that they're better as champions because when they gloat, they have something to gloat about. And I'm not 100% sure why this title change happened other than they just signed new contracts and something was promised to them. And I don't like thinking that way because I'm not even supposed to know about their contracts. That's not supposed to be something that I'm aware of. But it just comes off a little bit, you know, kind of a little ass-kissing that I'm not 100% sure of. Now, if there's a story attached to it, if we have the AJ with the U.S. title, then with the tag team titles, and then we somehow get a New Day versus OC match, then, I mean, maybe, sure. But even that doesn't intrigue me all that much because it kind of lowers Kofi. If AJ is, like, the front runner of these of this team and all three have belts, I could see it. It's cool for what it is, but I think that the team that should have held on to them just kind of suffered in the long run. With regards to the match, though, it was good. Everyone played their roles the right way. The Usos, their extracurricular activities aside, are just so fucking strong in terms of wrestling. They're so consistently good. And tonight was yet another match where they were, I think, the focal, the main players, the ones that kind of glued it all together. Not saying anybody did bad because everyone did great. Even Gallows had this fucking ground and pound, like everything he did looked like it hurt, which is, I think, very necessary for his size because he's kind of slow. So yeah, this isn't a part of the show where I can complain too much. I enjoyed it.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Gallows and Anderson against the Revival thrown onto the pre-show for the Raw Tag Team title for SummerSlam. Just a match that you could very easily have on what will be a 2-hour pre-show for what will be a 19-hour pay-per-view, as Tony put it earlier. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see them doing some kind of a return match on the pre-show with Gallows and Anderson against the Revival. I'm just not sure that people are going to care because of all four people in both teams respectively being heel aligned. Liz, what did you make of the triple threat for the Raw Tag Team titles tonight?
Well, first, I don't think they need to have a match again, you know, so quickly. I mean, like this, I really like to put as many people as possible on the pay-per-views, which hopefully will only be, you know, a normal 8 to 10 hours and not the 27 that you two were predicting. But that aside, it was a really good match. I think all three worked very well well together. It was very cohesive. The Usos were definitely the highlights of it. But the Gallows and Anderson definitely seemed to be a bit rejuvenated, which is good, since there's always so much crap that, like Tony said, that we don't really need to know about backstage and what goes on, why they're there, or, you know, they phone it in, you know, whatever. So it was nice to see a little fire in them. And as, you know, for the Revival, I can't really add anything to that Tony or anybody else hasn't, you know, said. But the match itself was very entertaining.
Yeah, I'm okay with the match in general. I don't like the fact that they kind of just haphazardly took the titles off of the Revival to put them on Gallows and Anderson for kind of like this trios power trip thing here. And especially when you see Gallows and Anderson getting involved in the closing segment tonight of something that they had absolutely fucking nothing to do with going into this. But, I mean, that kind of an is-what-it-is situation. I guess we'll have to see where they go from there here. Hey, Tony.
What's up?
You know how last week when the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland ended up taking on Hawkins and Ryder, and we actually thought that they might be going on to progressing to face actual real WWE opponent competition?
No, I never thought that.
You fucking liar.
I did not. Why would I?
Well, apparently they're back to the Jobber Squad. Excuse me, Enhancement Talent Squad. I get yelled at for calling them jobbers. I'm pretty sure that was the Jim Nasty Boys that were the Enhancement Talent tonight, which, is, if it was, is pretty cool for them. But regardless, in about 2 minutes, the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland Experience pick up a victory over a team that they really didn't need to be facing in a segment that really didn't need to be happening. Tony?
I got up and went to the restroom during this match, and I just wrote in the report, squash. That's all that I care to say about it.
Liz?
I don't know. I'm kind of with Tony on that one. I just didn't pay attention to the match. I'd be honest, I was paying attention to Twitter reports about something else that's on TV. But it's kind of dumb. It served absolutely no purpose. We said it last week, and I think most people are saying it, that Braun squash match. I mean, Braun was on for like, what, 2 seconds tonight, you know, whatever. But it serves no purpose. They're not doing anything to really further their characters or even develop their characters. They get the little, you know, moments before the match, you know, where they're semi-hyped up or whatever, and they're in like this shadowy, darkened, you know, type thing. And then it's like, oh, they're coming. And then they have like this squash match. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't do anything for them. So,
yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
During the match, I could hear Cole and Corey going over, like, I don't know, something about thousands of Vikings or whatever. And so it's
mm-hmm.
like they're trying to give them some type of character. They did the same thing with Sarah Logan. But the problem with this is it's complete and obvious exposition. And when a storyteller does that, whether it's on TV or in a book or, you know, it comes off as completely hokey. It's like if we were to start the show,
mm-hmm.
this show, The Raw Reaction, telling all of our listeners our history as a fan and, like, how much we watch wrestling and how, you know, how credible we are. But we did that every show. It's exposition for the sake of exposition. There's no point
right.
to it other than to self-congratulate you on yourself. Similarly on this show, they're telling us what these characters are, where they come from, and all this because they're their characters. But it's information
mm-hmm.
that none of us care about or need
right.
to sh- especially if they're going to be in the match for like a minute 30 seconds. Like, show us that you could wrestle, attack someone we care about, bite their fucking ear off. I don't know. Blow on a horn before you go into the match. I don't know. Do what Vikings do. Don't tell me what Vikings do. So it ultimately comes into this position where I'm willingly going to the restroom and Liz is going to go fucking read a tweet.
That's exactly, and I won't hype some other show that's on, but that's exactly what I'm doing, because it doesn't hold any interest for me. I don't even want to use the wrong term. It's not like we'd get like the bits before, you know, when Bray and his little cronies, you know, first came, where there was something that was more to it. It was like, there's no stirring of excitement. There's no like, oh my God, okay. There's no rocking chair. There's no light. There's no little lighters, you know, in the stands or whatever. There's nothing to lure you in, you know, whatsoever. They don't even speak for, you know, even badly. Are they that bad that they're not allowed to speak? Or are we supposed to think that the Vikings don't speak English, which, you know, all right, obviously they probably didn't. But, you know, and if that's the case that you want to, you know, portray, then give them, you know, a mouthpiece, which, again, wouldn't make sense on a whole other thing, because then you have people, and I'm not knocking them, like Nakamura and, you know, whoever, who could probably benefit from one, because their English maybe is not, you know, their strong point, but are amazing talents. And they don't, you know, they didn't do that, you know, with them. So we're obviously not going to believe that these two guys, you know, don't speak English, even, you know, even if it's supposed to, like, pretend we believe, you know, believe stuff. But there's just nothing. There's nothing that sucks you in. I was, you know, I paid more attention to the women's wrestling, and I, you know, I'm not going to go down that road again than I did this, because it's what, 2 minutes? Okay. You can get a drink. I could read, I can check on something else. And, you know, that's it. There's nothing that makes it of any interest.
They need a midget wrestler to dress up like a Viking with an accent and just go to town.
I'd pay attention. You know what? I'd pay attention. Because I'd be like, what the hell is this? What are they doing? What are they doing? You know, like
Tyrion Lannister just going in.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I missed part of the, my mind went blank, the Street Profits. And I was like, oh, darn, I missed it. Because I wanted to hear them, because they are, you know, entertaining. The only thing I got from them was, you know, the part about don't spread rumors that he's Marie's, you know, baby daddy, and suddenly realizing that one of them looks a lot like Anthony Anderson. But don't get mad at me for that, people. I'm not implying anything. I'm just saying the guy looks a lot like Anthony Anderson. So, but like that, I was like, oh, darn. You know, I felt like, oh, I have to go look that up later. I want to see what they said, because they are usually 9 times out of 10 pretty entertaining, you know, or say stuff that you the fan might be thinking, whereas the Vikings, I'm not going to go look them up. They could post 10,000 videos of them, and maybe I'll watch a second of one of them. Did you catch the prophet?
Harold. Harry, is your name Harold?
Is Harry's name Harold?
It's not. I'm trying to poop, Tony. So talk about the Street Profits.
Well, ain't that some shit? Yeah, the Street Profits. You know, I read that they're not going to be used as wrestlers on the main card or on the main show, whatever. So that's kind of unfortunate, because these little skits in the back, they're going to eventually get tiresome. I do think that they have an entertainment value. I think that they can be funny, because they come off relatively natural. And I know that sounds weird, because not everybody is aware of this particular take on, I'll just say it, like, not everybody's aware that this is how black people talk, at least a particular section of them. And they are representative of that. I'm surrounded by it. I live in L.A. That's L.A. Like, that. This just
New York
it's
City.
Hood,
yeah,
it's straight
absolutely.
Up. It's, yeah, yeah. Yep. And it's hilarious. And it works. It's when they become caricatures, or when they get a little bit too, like, okay, well, that's a little bit too obvious, you know, where it comes off as hokey. And they didn't really do it tonight, because it was short and sweet. But last week, I think they were kind of hitting that stride. So eventually, we're going to want to see them wrestle. And, I mean, maybe that's what they're going for, but I don't know. Yeah, but Seth Rollins coming up and kind of being the cool white guy, that didn't work for me. I wasn't a fan of that. Like, all right, buddy.
Yeah, he's I think for me, as somebody who follows like all his social media and stuff, he's known as being like, you know, so dorky that it came off like even, you know, even worse than I think.
Yeah,
than maybe it was.
Doesn't need to come high five people like.
Yeah,
not,
no, not at all.
Whereas the Street Profits come off incredibly urban and very hip to their culture, Seth Rollins came off incredibly saltine American this evening.
Now listen, I've been to Iowa, okay? I've only been to one city in Iowa, but I was there for a week and I didn't see one black man. So I don't know, Seth, where you got your friends from, but I don't believe it.
In fairness, he did do a lot of traveling for wrestling, so that's probably where most of them came from. Cause they damn sure weren't in Iowa. Iowa, Indiana, to an extent, certain parts of Illinois.
You're all
find
very
more corn
judgmental.
Than you find
that,
black people.
You're all very judgmental about how people may or may not have had friends of a certain.
Oh, I'm totally being facetious, but it just
no,
fits with the narrative of
I'm like,
it makes it easier for me to make fun of him.
You know, like these poor people in Iowa, you mean not just about that, just Iowans in general.
It's not like we have anybody in Iowa that listens, and if we did, the two people that do don't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Hey, Iowa was a trip for me. I went when I was a teenager, and to go to a place and know exactly or be known by everybody in the city within 2 days was just wild to me. Like, over here, you can live next to somebody for 12 years and never even talk to them. In Iowa, they're like, oh, shit, it's California boy. Like, I'm a type of sushi or something. I don't know. It was weird. They had a bowling alley with two lanes. They had a movie theater with two theaters. You had beans on one side, corn on the other. They had every single season. it was wild.
I'm waiting for him to say one stoplight in a church that everybody went to on Sunday.
If they did, I wasn't invited. But yeah, it was definitely a shock. But it was so cool to just be enveloped in it. Like, damn, that's great. Because you ever need something, your neighbor's like, oh, for sure, yeah, here you go.
Yeah.
Over here, you know, you can't be borrowing sugar from anybody without them saying like, well, what you got?
You know, it's funny Tony says that, and I won't keep you off track, but I grew up in Staten Island, you know, one of the boroughs. If anybody's a wrestling fan, they hear Busting Out all the time. But anyway, the area that I lived in was, I mean, obviously, it was a different time. I grew up in, you know, in the 80s and everything. Everybody knew everybody. It was a very small town. Everybody did, you know, knew everybody. You listened to whatever parent told you to, you know, do something. It was great. I always say we grew up in our own little version of Mayberry. And truly, a lot of the people who grew up the time I was growing up, we're all still connected in some way. So it's great. But I actually had one of my neighbors ring my bell to borrow something the other day. And I was like, wow. It made me think, when was the last time, you know, this happened? So it's a great point. Those things don't happen anymore. And they definitely don't happen in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, and, you know, to swing it back to wrestling, whenever I have a pay-per-view, like, I leave my front door open because there's kids at two houses down that really like wrestling, but I have to consider, do I come off as a pedophile if I'm like, hey, go ask your mom if you can come watch, you know, the pay-per-view this week? You know?
Right,
I just kind of leave the door open, and there's, like, four or five little kids sitting outside, like, watching my big-screen TV. The world has changed because
that
would have been
so
nothing.
Cute. Yeah.
You know,
no,
like,
absolutely.
Like, all three of us, we would have just been like, we're going over to such and such's house because they fucking bought the pay-per-view like a dumbass and we can't afford it. So, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So what was next on Raw?
Liz, my apologies in advance for this statement here, but as the more tenured member of the roster here, she's discussing growing up in the 80s. Tony and I were both born in them.
That's why. Anyway, no, I'm not even going to say it.
That's why she's yawning right now.
No. Okay. Elizabeth is yawning because, unlike other people, she has to get up at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, she's a trooper.
So Elizabeth gets
up at 5:30
in the morning.
Yeah, I couldn't work the shift that she works. That's for damn sure.
Every day, even on the weekend.
Tony will be getting home from the strip club at about 5:30 in the morning on Tuesday morning, West Coast time.
Give or take.
Yeah, well, children will be children, but anyway, yeah.
Hopefully Liz knows I'm just kidding. Up next on Raw was the Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus Becky Lynch matches. We've obviously already discussed those, so we don't need to discuss them again. Therefore, we move forward to, oh my God, it's Sean. Oh, wait, it's Dawson. Shut the fuck up, Chris. Seth Rollins versus Dolph Ziggler goes about 7 minutes, ends on a disqualification, and then we will focus more of our time discussing about what happens afterwards there. Rollins has Ziggler set up for the curb stomp, the blackout, call it what you want to. Brock Lesnar gets involved. As Lesnar's approaching the ring, Seth looks ready to fight until Ziggler picks his ankle, letting Lesnar clothesline the shit out of Rollins, causing the disqualification. Tony, what did you make of the match before the disqualification, and then we'll talk about the beatdown afterwards?
Kind of boring. I'm not into Dolph. I haven't been in a long time. He's a great wrestler. Seth Rollins is a great wrestler, but they didn't really go far in this match, and the reason was because, you know, Brock was going to show up. So you kind of felt that. Obviously, I didn't know Brock was going to show up, but it felt sluggish, a little on the slower side. I'm uninterested in Dolph Ziggler, you know, being the anti-HBK. I'm also uninterested in Seth Rollins standing up for the roster. I get it. I get that it's his role. He's a champion, and it's not new, and neither is it, like, out of character. It makes perfect sense. I'm just not interested in it. You know, and that's definitely a personal thing that has nothing to do with like critiquing or anything. It doesn't sit with me. I'm not a fan. So this segment before Brock didn't really do much for me.
Liz, same question. Thoughts on Rollins Ziggler?
I mean, they just you know like people like for some reason think they can throw spaghetti on the wall to tell when it's done, like if it sticks. You know, it's kind of like that. They just Dolph is the spaghetti. They just keep throwing in places to see, you know, where it sticks and where it's going to work, and everything, you know, full short. I think the character of Dolph, his angst and angriness has gone stale. They've been playing it for a while, and he's not the first one to have done it. So it's nothing new that we haven't, you know, heard before, like we say a lot. It was, you know, what it was. I wasn't looking at the screen. I was like, oh, Sean, no, it's Dolph. You know, too, we all had that reaction, whether we want to admit it or not. At least some of us did. I'll admit to it, you know. Was what it was. It wasn't anything spectacular. And then Mr. Lesnar comes out to liven things up.
Can I just point out that this is the kind of analysis that you will only get on this show? Dolph Ziggler is spaghetti. I had to think about that for a second as you were originally saying it, and then I thought about it and I'm like, holy shit, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the best at this, but sometimes I can make a little bit of sense. But it's true, they're just kind of sticking him in, you know, spot at the spot with the same spiel. I mean, he did it on SmackDown, you know, blah 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 blah. He did it before he left. It was the same thing, you know. And it's not working. For whatever reason. And, you know, I like Dolphin.
Speaking of things that aren't working, any attempt that Seth Rollins had at getting on offense on Brock Lesnar, yikes, that was one-sided. I get the idea behind the beatdown that Lesnar put on Rollins tonight, but it doesn't make it any more interesting to me. Tony, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it looked good, you know, but I don't – if nothing is going to make me care about Seth Rollins chasing Brock Lesnar for the title. No beatdown, nothing that they can create, because I don't have faith in them creating something. What I do like is them tying up the rough loose ends where people would question why Roman Reigns isn't out there. And although it was really cheesy and kind of like Quentin Tarantino-esque. I thought it was kind of funny how they swept camera-wise from the beatdown to the ambulance without cutting or making a break. It's like, okay, guys, you're trying a little too hard there, but I got it. It's like high-fiving someone for, like, doing a really complicated math problem that nobody asked them to do. Like, yeah, you did it, but I didn't ask you to. So it was a small thing. It was a small thing. But they don't do that in the WWE. They don't do sweeping camera motions. They don't do, you know, low shot from an angle and then over to a wide shot of an ambulance. So it was really interesting, that particular take on it, that probably no one gives a shit about except me.
I don't think it's just you, Tony, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the man whose influence we're starting to see more and more on Monday nights. That was a major thing in ECW. Anything that happens backstage is completely important to what happens inside of the ring. The backstage is just an extension of the ring, even though the matches are decided in the ring. Everything that happens backstage is canon. Everything that happens backstage is important. That was something that Paul Heyman was notorious for in ECW, and that's something that Paul Heyman is kind of starting to bring a little bit to the more on a more regular basis to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, well, it was a welcome thing, although, you know, a little overbearing, but, well, it was, you know, I saw the Quentin movie last night, and it was, it was 3 hours long, damn near, and it was kind of self-serving at moments where it was, like, Quentin being Quentin, but it was funny to have that juxtaposition so early in my mind from last night to tonight to seeing the sweeping angle. I thought it was interesting. But, yeah, the beatdown, like you said, no coughing or blood coming out the mouth of Seth is going to make me want to see this match any more than I do already, which is not a lot.
One more quick question. One quick question about the movie, and then I'll get Liz's thoughts. Do we get to see Margot Robbie's tits?
No, not at all. But, I mean, you know, that wasn't necessarily part of the film. You know, Sharon Tate, if you know the story of Sharon Tate, then, you know, seeing her boobs wasn't – it's not going to help you other than – the fact that you're a pervert. So
I just want to see Margot Robbie's tits. All right, Liz.
Yeah, it's really good that we just record this and it's not a video, because I would just be rolling my eyes a lot and they'd be like, she's a bitch. They'd be right. I am a cranky old woman. The beatdown, I don't hate, like I said last week, I don't hate Brock, you know, as much as everybody else. I get it. He's like hardly ever there. I mean, he is here more now, which is nice. But you know, it did seem a little gratuitous, I guess, for lack of a better word. There's nothing I can really add. It was what it was. Oh yeah, you know, he bled. The only thing I really liked about the beatdown was that they left Becky out of it, unlike the last time where she followed him into the, you know, the ambulance. But it was what it was. It was Brock being Brock, and if there's a purpose to this, it eludes me at the moment. But I really don't care what the purpose is, because we're just gonna get what we get.
To Liz's statement there, breaking news for next week's episode of Raw, the Rollins-Lesnar match is now an ambulance match at SummerSlam.
Oh, God, that's
don't
real?
Say some
Are you
horrible
waiting?
Things.
I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, it's not obviously
right.
I'm being facetious here, but...
Thank God. All right, don't do that, Harry.
Don't put things like that out in the universe, Harold. Harrison, whatever the heck your actual name is, because I forgot. I don't do that.
I think it's Geraldo. I think it's actually Geraldo. Yeah.
That would be awesome. I like it. I am now called
Geraldo.
Few
people actually know I'm more Mexican than Tony is. Yes.
I am so calling him that from now on.
Jesus Christ. Samoa Summit doesn't happen. As Tony mentioned, we saw Samoa Joe and the Good Brothers beating up the Usos and Roman Reigns backstage. Again, why would the Good Brothers fucking care to beat up the Usos again? Regardless, inside of the ring, Joe and Roman break down into a brawl once again. It ends up turning out around ringside where Drew McIntyre gets involved. Once McIntyre gets involved, a little bit later on, Cedric Alexander gets involved, which I'm sure Tony will have something to say about.
After that, it is then the Good Brothers and the Usos getting involved, and it turns into an eight-way fracas, 4-on-4, as we go off the air for Monday Night Raw, which leaves the Bloodline and Cedric Alexander standing tall after Roman lays out Samoa Joe with a spear. The one talking point here, though, I think, Tony, is the fact that Cedric Alexander jumped off the fucking set.
That was great.
I mean, you say jump, I say fell. I don't, you know,
oh.
Sure.
Tomato, tomato. Your thoughts on the way we went off the air tonight, Tony?
It was exciting. You know, it was one of the more exciting ends of Raw, an ending that you could, you know, use as evidence towards anything could happen, which is something that they have long since had. So in that aspect, it was kind of cool. Reigns had mega support from the crowd, and it's because he was surrounded by people that the crowd cared about. Cedric being a main event player, like I said, is something you don't readily believe. However, if they continue to do this, then he's going to be looked at the same way Ali is, where it's like, well, he's, I believe it now. You know, you're making me believe. I don't think he's there yet, but I think that he'll get there. If this leads to an 8-man tag, it's like kind of formulaic, even in its, you know, surprise. But ultimately, it'd probably be good wrestling. I don't understand the club being involved. They just won the titles. Why do they give a shit? Like, why are they going to beat down the Usos? They just beat them. They just won. So it doesn't make much sense. Unless, of course, there's a reason. And this is what troubles me about the WWE a lot, is that they never give the reason when they're supposed to, and they always give us reasons when we don't need them. It's super weird, but all you really need is a throwaway comment, you know? Just one little thing. Just one little boom, this is why. They would make more sense for the Revival to be there. It would make way more sense for the Revival to do exactly what the OC did. That makes sense. Revival's pissed. Revival's upset. Revival thinks if it was a 2-on-2 match, they would have won. The Usos are idiots. They hate them. They fucking burn their balls with Bernie shit. So that makes sense. Having the big guys do it, I don't know. It seems kind of shoehorned in. But like I said, an exciting ending to a not a bad Raw, and nice little signs of something of more to come, hopefully.
Well, not to mention, Tony, you mentioned that the Revival would make more sense there. In addition, we've seen the Revival aligned with McIntyre in the past in order to take out Roman Reigns, too.
Yeah. Something makes me feel like they're going to go towards SmackDown a little bit more and you'll be Shane's lackeys or something. I don't know. I hope the best for them, but tonight wasn't a good night for the Revival.
Liz, what did you make of the 8-way fracas that broke off as we were going off the air for Monday Night Raw tonight?
You know, when it first started, I thought I missed something. I thought at first, and this is really just because the angle I was sitting as, you know, watching the TV, but I thought I missed something. At first, I thought somebody attacked Roman. I originally thought that Brock attacked Roman for whatever reason, which in some twisted sort of way would kind of make sense since he's supposed, you know, still friends with Seth or whatever. But yeah, the whole beginning of it was a very WTH, you know, moment, but it, you know, it was exciting. I got into it. I was like, this makes no sense, but I'm really enjoying it for whatever reason. You know, I was like, it was different, you know. And one thing I have to say about the show is that it, you know, it had its, you know, moments we could bash or whatever, but it did, you know, move along pretty quickly. I was actually left with like, oh wait, that's it. That's how it's ending, and not in a bad way. Like, no, wait, I don't want it to end like that. I want to know why they're all fighting. So, you know, it did, for me, it did, you know, something, you know, maybe what it was supposed to do, like, has me interested, like, okay, like, why did this happen? And it had some great, you know, moments. And then it was kind of, like, hectic, and I'll admit to, you know, not that I was not paying attention, because I was, but it was a little distracting here. You know, at that time, I was like, oh, wait, where did Drew come from? So you had these moments like, wait, why are all these people, you know, fighting each other now? And where did they come from? But, you know, it does have me curious, like, okay, where are they going to, you know, go, you know, with this? Well, obviously, I have a feeling we're going to get Roman and the Usos versus, you know, the OC, whatever you want to call them. Which, you know, could have, which is like the new Shield versus, you know, the Club. But I'd be okay with that. I always wanted to burst the Club, you know, so I'm pretty okay with this. I love the Usos. I love, you know.
Well, I was going to say there, I think I'd be okay with adding Roman and the Usos against, say, McIntyre and Gallows and Anderson, or Joe with Gallows and Anderson at SummerSlam in a six-man tag.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it kind of fucks Cedric, but you could do Cedric and Drew in a singles match and kind of play off the fact that they've had those two matches on Monday Night Raw the last 2 weeks there, and then have them sent towards the pay-per-view payoff. The one thing that I wanted to touch on here, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts here, I don't know how much of that organization from Philadelphia either you guys did or did not watch there. To me, the ending came off very ECW-esque of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, therefore Cedric's going out there to help Roman against Drew. The Usos are going out there to help their cousin against whatever battles he's fighting. The club know that the Usos, the Good Brothers, the OC, whatever you want to fucking call them, they know that the Usos are going to be on their tail for the tag team titles, so they're going to get involved and try to help out McIntyre and Joe and make as many friends as they can in order to help give them more allies to keep the tag team titles. It all kind of blended together, even if it was in sort of a what-the-fuck kind of way, but it all made some, at least a small modicum of sense in the grand scheme of things here. Tony, were you a big ECW watcher?
No. At the tail end, I was.
Okay. Liz, same question. Were you a big ECW watcher? I mean, you're kind of in one of the areas that was a hot spot for it up in New York.
No, because of the, when it was at its heyday. Not that I wasn't into wrestling, but it wasn't its avid, TV watcher and such as that. I mainly followed it online, and you know, I've watched it in subsequent years, but not so much as it was happening.
Okay, that's fair enough. I just, as somebody who watched the old ECW on a regular basis when it was still on air, that's how the ending of tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw came off to me. And I would be curious, if anybody's listening here, if you want to go ahead and shoot us an email or shoot us a message over at thechairshot.com, or you can listen to this and many of our other fine presentations of the Chairshot Radio Network, then by all means, feel free to do so. I want to get your guys' thoughts and see if it kind of came off that way to anybody else out there, or if I'm just trying to connect straws where they really don't need to be connected. That's going to wrap up tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw for July 29th, 2019. We will now go into our final reaction for the show. Tony, favorite match moment tonight?
Harry, I'm going to ask that you do all of those, the entire final reaction with me, because a friend who I very specifically told to show up at 10 and no earlier is sitting in front of me. So my favorite match moment would be the gauntlet match for sure.
Basically what Tony's saying is you're too goddamn early!
Okay. Yes. And happy birthday.
And happy birthday, yes. If I had a sound effect for it, I'd play it. Actually, you know what? I probably do. But I don't have time to sound effect. God damn it!
Anybody got time for that?
That'll work.
Greg Watry moment would be Maria and everything that she did. Definitely not a fan of that. It's annoying to me.
Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
I'm going to go 7. A positive 7, not a negative 7. What I saw mostly tonight was an effort, and that's something I haven't seen in a long time. So there's always going to be stuff that I don't like, me, Tony, because I have a certain expectation of writing in general from TV shows. So there's always going to be something. But I'm also smart enough to realize that some critiques are unfair, given that it's a wrestling show. However, tonight I saw effort. I saw them trying to do certain things, trying a little bit of this, trying a little bit of that, and that effort allows me to say, well, at least you're trying. So I'm going to go with a 7.
Who's your MVP?
Cesaro. I have like such a man crush on him and his big nipples. It's great.
When in doubt, give it to Cesaro. By the way, Tony, to your friend with the birthday.
Take the fish.
I hope he does not tonight.
You guys have fun. Right. We'll talk to you next time, Tony.
Bye.
See y'all later. Deuces, bitches.
All right, Liz. we'll go back and forth now since Tony had to split. Favorite match or moment tonight, Liz?
Gauntlet match, definitely. Best match of the night.
See, I actually liked the tag team title match a little bit more because I thought all three teams got a chance to shine. So I was a little bit more invested in the tag team title match. Who's your? What about your Greg Watry, your least favorite match or moment?
Anything. Same thing as Tony. Anything with Maria. Oh, God, awful. I just muted it. Every time she showed up, I muted the TV, so I can't even tell you what she said.
Maria hasn't been entertaining for me since she did Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm coming off like a perv tonight. Oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
The shoe fits. Lace that bitch up and wear it. Yeah, this does absolutely nothing. The whole storyline with the Canellis Bennett, whatever the fuck you want to call them, it does nothing for me. I'm over it, and I don't like the fact that you've taken what has the more entertaining aspects of Monday Night Raw with the 24/7 title and flushed it with this storyline as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the 24/7 title can recover, but this could be the moment we look back on it and be like, yep, that's the moment it became fucking irrelevant. Scale of 1 to 10.
I liked it a little bit more than Tony did, but I know I'm not the crankiest person around. Although, of course, she speaks way, way better than I do. I'm going to give it an 8 because I really like the fact that it, for me, this is my opinion, flowed and there wasn't anything other than the Maria crap, but there was nothing that really totally dragged it down. And like I said, you know, a little while ago, at the end, you're like, oh, wait, it's the end already? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think everything, you know, moved along, had a really good pace. And for me, kind of, it left me wanting some more. So I give it an 8.
I was about to say, basically, it did what a weekly episodic television show, which is what it loves to call itself, is supposed to do. It gave you some substance, but left you wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to split the difference for you and Tony and say 7.5. Overall, I really enjoyed the show, but there were a few things, a couple maybe minor nitpicks to some people, but a few things for me personally that I can't overlook to the point that I would go any higher than I normally would go. In fairness to Tony, his 7 is like a normal person's 9, because Tony almost never goes up this high.
I am not knocking Tony. Hard for me. Okay, that's good. But for me, it's like I haven't been doing this as long as, you know, you guys. You know, I just do it, you know, for kicks. We all know I'm not that great at it or that interesting to listen to. He's very well-spoken. He's very eloquent in a lot of ways. He's very, you know, knowledgeable. But he sounds cranky, but I like it because I'm a cranky, you know, cranky person. But I don't mean that in a negative way until he annoys me in a totally different group, and then my thoughts on might change.
So basically what you're saying is Tony's an asshole, but he's that nice kind of asshole that you're still okay with.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty much been my rap on him for the last 5 years, yes. Who's your MVP tonight, Liz?
Who's my MVP? You know, it might be easy for me to say Cesaro because everybody who knows me knows my love of that man. My MVP. You know what? I'm not going to say Cesaro. I'm going to give my MVP to Andrade. Mainly because, not that he was great. Him and Ray were fabulous, like we said. But mainly because he actually made me interested in him and wanting to see more of him, which is something that, you know, like I said, I haven't really given him much attention. So for him, and it's rare because as we just finished saying, I'm a cranky person, I'm an old woman, for me to go back and be like, oh, wait, I'm missing something about this person. I have to go back and watch his stuff. That's my MVP.
I'm about to say words that are going to make me public enemy number one on this show.
I can't wait.
My MVP for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw is Rey Mysterio Jr.
No,
I thought Rey completely...
You...
Well, because certain people have made their dislike of Rey very well known.
Oh, do you mean me?
Rey... Com- Yes, you. You specifically. You're the one who dislikes Ray. Yes.
Yes, I do, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to knock your belief in it. Listen, I have said earlier, and I've said before, Ray does nothing, you know, for me. I'm not knocking Ray's talent. We all know Ray is an amazing talent. But for things I'm not going to get into on this podcast, because it go to 17 hours or we'll just get into an argument, I don't like him. You know, I can't take to him. He never wrestles again. Best of luck to him and his family. I wish them nothing but the best. I'm not going to knock you for, you know, liking him. Hello. First of all, what did I say earlier? I like Jinder. I like Baron. I take lots of shit about that. And I deserve it because they're Baron and Jinder. Ray is Ray. Ray is a legend. Half the people there, you know, will never have an ounce of talent that Ray has in them. But I just don't like them. And that's okay.
If it's any consolation, I kind of like Baron too. Don't tell anyone.
Well, I've known that. I've known that. We've had conversations about that.
And I don't hate Jinder. At least not as much as I used to. The reason I'm picking Ray, though, is because I thought that Ray held that gauntlet match together perfectly. He was the perfect driving force for that match, and you were able to tell each match's individual story around Ray specifically,
mm-hmm.
up until the point that he got knocked out of the match by Andrade. I thought that was fantastic storytelling on both the writing team's part as well as Ray's part himself, to put himself in the position to be able to tell the story that he was able to tell throughout the course of that gauntlet match.
I agree.
We might have a show next week. I don't know. Maybe. Possibly. I'm not sure. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Liz has a prior commitment that is going to leave her unable to do the show. I'm going to be at Raw next Monday and will not be home in time to do a podcast. And while Tony is more than capable of doing this by himself, I don't imagine that Tony would have the desire to do this by himself. Therefore, I'm going to talk to Tony and find out if he's going to be doing a show and if he has somebody lined up that can do the show with him. If he does, then you will see a Raw reaction next week here on the network. If he does not, then we will talk to you guys in 14 days to discuss what happened at SummerSlam. And you can check out the Fantasy Wrestling League over on Facebook in order to see my predictions for SummerSlam and Liz's predictions as well. Is Tony doing the pick'ems this year? Is he a part of the pick'em pool? I haven't seen his name.
I believe he is.
I know DeMarco's.
Mm-hmm.
I know DeMarco's doing the pick'em pool over there. So yeah, all the more reason to go check out the Fantasy Wrestling League over on Facebook, run by Rick Bailon and Patrick Primo Jr.
As I understand it,
the third in charge over there is Elizabeth Puglisi.
That would be me. Yes, it is. Geez, I do like a lot of the work over there. I should get some shout out.
I was getting there. I just wanted to make you wait for it, Geraldo.
Jeez.
That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. For Liz Puglisi and Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. Maybe we see you next Monday. Maybe we see you in 2 weeks. Either way, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time here on the Raw Reaction on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Bye, everyone. Tony, you can hit...
Bye.
Liz, you can hit Tony's line if you want to.
I actually know Tony's line, so, you know, I'm not going to. Plus, I don't want to steal somebody else's thing, because then they'd be like, oh, she sounds horrible.
I will. Deuces, bitches!
Bye.
Tragic play. Only curtains remain to fall. There's no reason left to stay in this play. We move backwards against the wall. Conversation's over. Communication's dead. Yeah.
You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Join us again. See, I can't do that because I don't know if we'll have a show next week. Join us again in 2 weeks as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and to be determined. There's a reason for that. We might have Andrew back. We might not. We're not sure. We'll let you know. Join you for the Raw Reaction at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. This got all kinds of fucked up. Liz, help. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you guys when the Raw Reaction returns here to the Chair Shot Radio Network.